How's your car looking? Showing its age? Faded paint? Dents? Dings? Don't worry. Maaco is here to help. They're the experts in affordable paint jobs and light collision repairs, helping you keep your car looking its best without breaking the bank. With Maaco's national reach and community focus, you're not just getting top-notch service. You're actually getting a partner you can trust. Visit your local Maaco today and see how they can refresh your ride. Go in, get the free estimate, and the expert technicians will handle the rest. Uh-oh, better get Maaco.
Want to pull off the season's freshest trends? You just need the right shoes. That's where Designer Shoe Warehouse comes in. Loving wide leg jeans? Pair them with sleek, low-profile sneakers. Obsessed with the sheer trend? Try it with mesh flats. Feeling boho? Comfy sandals nail the whole free-spirited thing. Find on-trend shoes from the brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, and more at DSW.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.
This message comes from Greenlight. Ready to start talking to your kids about financial literacy? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app that teaches kids and teens how to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest with your guardrails in place. With Greenlight, you can send money to kids quickly, set up chores, automate allowance, and keep an eye on what your kids are spending with real-time notifications. Join millions of parents and kids building healthy financial habits together on Greenlight. Get started risk-free at greenlight.com/iHeart.
This is Nightmare in Wisconsin.
The trial of Taylor Shabusiness. Accusations of first-degree intentional homicide, strangulation, mutilation, dismemberment, and necrophilia.
We bring you raw, unfiltered courtroom audio from the trial of Taylor Shabusiness. Nightmare in Wisconsin.
And what do you believe those to be?
These would be photographs that I took of Ms. Shabusiness's hands.
And those appear to depict Ms. Shabusiness's hands as you observed them in the interview room on February 23rd?
Yes.
And when, on February 23rd, would this contact have occurred? When did you begin the interview?
I believe I took the photos at approximately 6 a.m., and I think the interview started at about 6:30 a.m.
All right, so this was before the interview?
Yes.
All right. I'd move 103 through 107.
Any objection?
No.
103 Six. Through 107 will be relayed.
Sorry, Judge. 106.
106.
And then I'd ask permission to publish as well.
Any objection, Mr. Freilich?
No.
You can publish 103 to 106.
Okay, and then it'll be in front of you, but also behind you, whatever's easiest here. So are we observing photograph 103 at this point?
Yes, you are.
Okay, and what does this depict?
This would be her left hand. There is a superficial cut in the palm below the thumb, and then you can see the cut on the thumb partially from a side view.
Okay. And then exhibit 104, is that what we're looking at now?
Yes, it would be. That would be her right hand and a superficial cut in the palm of her hand.
Okay. And then 105.
This would be the cut on her thumb, her left hand thumb.
And then 106.
106 is kind of a superficial cut on the index finger of the left hand.
Okay. And then at some point during the interview, was Ms. Shabusiness transported for medical care with respect to the thumb?
Yes, when she requested medical care, she was transported to the hospital. Before that, she declined.
Okay, and did you accompany her during that visit?
Yes, I did.
And I guess, was there an attempt to have maybe the injury stitched up? in some way?
Yes, we brought her up to get stitches or get medical treatment, whatever they felt was necessary.
And was that done, ultimately?
She did receive medical treatment, but they did not give stitches due to the time.
What do you mean by that?
Apparently, it is, if it's outside the 8 or 12 hour frame, the stitches can't be put in. It doesn't work.
Okay. And you had contact with Mish Business about 6 a.m., you said?
Yes, so that's about when I started taking the photos.
When you, I guess, first encountered Misha Business and were taking those photographs, what kind of clothing was she wearing?
At that point, she had like a black spaghetti strap top, I believe, on, and some black leggings, more tighter spandex, I guess.
And were her clothing items subsequently collected by law enforcement?
Yes, they had did an initial collection of the outside clothing, and then I also had those items of clothing collected from her.
Okay. And I guess was a female officer involved in collecting the inner clothing items?
Yeah, when the clothing is collected, she's actually removed from the interview room to a room where it's not recorded, and a member of the same sex would be with them when the items are collected.
And was that done in this case?
Yes.
And then... the clothing items that were, I guess, collected from Misha Business, were those subsequently entered into evidence?
Yes, they would have been entered into evidence.
And that include the sweatpants or leggings or pants material that you talked about?
Yes.
Okay. After those photographs of Misha Business, did you participate in the interview of Misha Business?
Yes, I did.
And which other officer was with you?
Detective Groff.
During the course of the interview, did both of you sort of interject at some points and ask questions?
Yes.
Okay. Have you had the chance to review that February 23rd interview of Misha Business?
Yes, I have.
Okay. And that appeared to be fairly inaccurately and consistent with your interview, as you recall it, of the defendant?
Yes.
All right. Thank you. I have nothing further.
Cross-examination.
Thank you. Morning, Detective Kemp.
Morning.
So on February 23rd of 2022, you were contacted by the lieutenant at about 4:13 a.m. to come and assist. Is that true?
Yes, that'd be approximate time.
Were you told to go over to 829 Stony Brook Lane?
No, I was requested to come to the station, that we were all going to meet at the station at that point.
And from the station, then you went to the house?
No, when I initially arrived at the station, I was asked to assist in interviews.
Okay. Did you go to the home at all on that particular day?
It would have been later that day that I would have went to the home.
You went to the home after the interview was taken?
Yes.
Okay. Tell me when you got to the station, kind of like what occurred or the events that happened until you got into the interview room.
Basically, as I'm coming in, I called one of the supervisors to try to get a quick briefing, try to get some more additional information. When we arrive at the station, they give us a briefing of what is known at that time, and then job assignments are given out by our supervisors, and they ask us to do what needs to get done, and they start formulating a plan on how to go about the scene.
And what was your job assignment?
My job assignment was to assist in interviews.
Was it to assist Detective Ruff?
With Taylor Shea Business, yes.
Okay. So when you got to the Green Bay Police Department or the station, was she there already?
She came in, I believe, about 5:30. She was brought into the interview room.
A.M.?
Yes.
Okay. And was there some things that had to be done before you started talking to her? Like taking pictures and things like that?
I believe patrol did snap some initial photographs. And like I indicated, I believe they took initially her outer clothing items.
Okay. And then she was put into a suit?
That would have been after I took my photos. I took additional photos.
Okay.
And then she was, when we collected the inner clothing, because we were taking all of her clothing, she was placed into some type of clothing that we had, which was basically a Tyvek suit at that time.
Okay. It was early in the morning. Did she appear to be, did Taylor Shabizis appear to be tired?
She appeared to be no more tired than I was. I mean, she was able to talk, able to speak to me, understand.
How about her eyes? Did they appear to be odd, like where she was having difficulty seeing?
I wouldn't say that she had a hard time seeing. It didn't seem like that.
Did she have any slurred speech?
Not that I noticed.
When she was talking, was she making sense?
Yes, she was able to hold a conversation and answer questions and seemed to be coherent about what was being said and asked.
Was she calm?
Was she calm?
Yes.
Yes.
So then at some point, Detective Groff took some swabs, correct?
Yes, we would have swabbed her hands shortly after the photos were taken because there was some discoloration on her hands that appeared as it could be blood, so we decided to swab the hands.
Okay. And Mr. Saunders asked you about those exhibits 103 through 106. Ms. Shabizis did have cuts on her hands, palms, and thumbs, correct?
Yes.
And the substance that was on her hands, you don't know where that came from, if it came from the cuts or something else, correct?
I do not know, no.
Okay. And then, so then you and Detective Groff proceeded with your interview of Ms. Shabizis, is that fair?
Yes.
Okay. Then at some point, you took a break, correct?
There were several breaks taken during the interview.
But then there was a break where you where you had her go to St. Vincent's Hospital in Green Bay for some medical treatment of these cuts, correct?
Yes, I believe that was around 9:30 a.m. approximately. It was about 3 hours after the interview started, give or take a little bit.
So 3 hours later, approximately?
Yes, is when she asked for medical attention.
Did you accompany her to the hospital, or how did that work?
Yes, we had a MARC squad transport her up there. I rode up with her in the MARC squad. Was in the room or just outside the room at points because I had to step out when they were changing her. And then when she was transported back, she was placed back in that MARC squad and I rode back in that MARC squad with her.
Was Detective Groff with you when you went over to the St. Vincent's Hospital?
No.
You took her by yourself?
No, it would have been myself and another officer.
Okay. What time did you arrive back at the Green Bay Police Department?
I believe it was about an hour or 70 minutes later, off the top of my head.
Okay. Maybe around 10:30 or so?
10:30, 10:40.
And then you proceeded with a further interview?
There was additional interview done.
Okay, I have nothing further. Thank you.
Redirect?
No, thank you.
Okay, thank you, Detective. You can step down. State's next witness.
State calls Detective Groff.
Okay. Step forward. Clerk will swear you.
Solemnly swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth in the matter, now before the court, so help you God. Thank you. Please have a seat and state your name for the record. Thanks. David Graff, G-R-A-F. Okay, then the witness is yours, Mr. Lozay. Detective Graff,
how are you employed?
I'm a detective with the Green Bay Police Department.
And how long have you worked with the Green Bay Police Department?
I have been with Green Bay for 27 years.
Do you have law enforcement experience prior to the Green Bay Police Department?
I do. I have 30 years of total law enforcement experience.
And what is your current role with the Green Bay Police Department?
I'm an investigator detective in the investigative division.
And how long have you been a detective with the Green Bay Police Department?
17 years.
And what were some of your other job duties with the Green Bay Police Department prior to working with the detective division?
I was a patrol officer for approximately 14 years. As part of my 17 years in investigative division, I was also a narcotics investigator with the Brown County Task Force for 2 years. And since then, since coming back in 2010, I've been a detective.
Were you working as a detective with the Green Bay Police Department on February 23rd of 2022?
Yes.
Were you called in to investigate a suspected homicide of Shad Therian?
Correct.
And what was your role in that investigation at the outset?
My initial role was to arrive at the police department and received a briefing of what was going on. And I was informed that some family members of Mr. Therian were at the police department. And I was asked to interview Tara Pakinich.
And did you conduct that interview?
I did.
What was the purpose of having that interview?
Get some basic information as to observations that she had made when she had last had contact with her son, who was on the residence, and basic information.
And once you completed your discussion with Tara, then what did you do?
I was then informed that Taylorship Business was now present at the police department. I was asked to interview her.
And that interview, was that on the morning of February 23rd of 2022?
Correct.
Is that an interview that was conducted in a recorded interview room at the Green Bay Police Department?
Yes, it was.
Did the recording devices work? Is everything operating well?
They did.
Subsequently, have you had an opportunity to review the recorded interview of Taylorship Business that occurred at the police department on February 23rd of 2022?
I have.
And do you believe that the recording of that interview accurately reflects your conversation with Ms. Shabusiness on that date?
It does.
And who was present during the interview with you?
Detective Kevin Kemp.
Was Ms. Shabusiness Mirandized prior to the substantive portions of the interview?
Yes.
Prior to moving into substantive questions with Ms. Shabusiness, did you make any physical observations of her?
Yes, I observed that she was wearing a tank top and some sweatpants that had dark colored, dark rubbed substances on her, on the clothing that I was told by patrol that they thought could be human blood, as well as some minor staining on her hands.
Yeah, and what did you do prior to interviewing her with respect to the clothing items and the staining on the hands?
I had the clothing items collected by a female officer, Officer Whitman, with the Green Bay Police Department. And I also took what we call buckle standard from Mr. Business using a buckle standard kit. And then I also took swabs of both her left hand and her right hand.
Could you describe the process that you used in collecting the buckle swab?
Yes, we have a kit that we use that contains two sterile swabs and some packaging material. So the kit is open, the swabs are used on one swab on one side of the cheek, one swab on the other side of the inside of the cheek, because that's where the buccal cells are located. Then the swabs are both placed into the packaging, labeled and sealed.
And is that something that you have done routinely in the past through your work as a detective at the Green Bay Police Department?
Yes.
Did you follow your training and the department protocols with respect to the collection of that buccal swab?
Yes.
And can you describe for the jury what you did in terms of swabbing Ms. Shabusiness's hands?
Yes. I used, again, sterile swabs and basically two swabs. One, I would put some distilled water onto the swab, swab the hand. And then the second swab would be a dry swab, and then I would swab the hand. Place those both into packaging, seal them, and then I would do the same for the second hand.
Now, when you say you swab the hand, what portions of the hand are you swabbing?
I swab the entire portion, the palm, the top of the hand, and such.
And with respect to the buccal swab and the swabs of the hands, what did you do with those after you had completed them and packaged them and signed them?
They were placed into the evidence department at the Green Bay Police Department.
Is that something you yourself did?
Yes.
And did you maintain custody and control those items until they were placed in evidence?
I did.
We'll return to the specifics of the interview in a moment, but I want to move on. After you interviewed Ms. Shabusiness, about how long was the interview with Ms. Shabusiness on that date?
Well, it was over a period of time. There were several breaks. Let's see, maybe over a period of time of 6 hours or so.
And after you conducted your interview with Ms. Shabusiness, what did you do?
At one point, I did go to the scene briefly and just provided some information at the scene. I believe I also talked again with Ms. Pakinich, because I had some follow-up questions that came up during that interview with Taylor Shabusiness concerning if Ms. Pakinich had in fact came down into the into the basement during a time period that Shad and Taylor would have been down there.
And I should also ask, while you're interviewing Ms. Shabusiness, are you remaining in communication with other investigators that are working on the case?
Yes.
And after the interview with Ms. Shabusiness, did you continue to stay in contact with other investigators about different aspects of the case?
Yes.
Subsequent to the February 23rd interview with Ms. Shabusiness, did you meet with her again for a second interview?
Yes.
And when did that take place?
February 28th, I believe.
And where was that interview?
That was also at the Green Bay Police Department in an interview room there.
And is that an interview that was also recorded?
Yes.
Was Ms. Shabusiness read her Miranda rights prior to that interview as well?
Yes.
And did she agree to speak with you on the 28th?
She did.
And who was present with you for that interview?
Detective Phil Scanlon.
Have you since had the opportunity to review the audio video recording of the February 28th interview with Ms. Shabusiness?
I have.
Does that recording accurately set forth what you recall from the interview itself?
Yes.
Is the quality of the audio the same in that one as it is in the 23rd?
No, it's not. The quality of the audio in the second interview was a little less than it was a little harder to hear.
Is there a reason for that?
The microphone in that particular room was not as sensitive as at other rooms.
And again, we'll get into the specifics of that interview, but I want to move into subsequent aspects of the investigation prior to doing that. At some point in time after the interview, did you assist in this investigation in other ways?
Yes.
What was the next thing that you recall doing after meeting with Ms. Shabusiness on the 28th?
Several things that I did was, one of the things that I did was I reviewed the evidence that was taken throughout the course of the investigation and chose several items that I wanted to send to the Wisconsin State Crime Lab for further analysis.
Is that generally how the process works with your department and the state crime lab? Is it the detectives select the items that will be sent to the state crime lab?
Yes.
And when you're deciding to send items to the state crime lab, are you aware of submission guidelines that the crime lab has?
I am.
What generally are the submission guidelines with respect to serious crimes such as this?
In these types of crimes, they ask that the first submission of evidence be limited to 10 items.
And did you send 10 items to the lab in this instance?
I did.
And when you were trying to select which items to send to the lab, what considerations did you have?
I took several considerations. There was quite a bit of evidence taken in this case. However, I was aware that there was at least two different scenes where evidence was collected, one being on Stony Brook Lane, the other being at Eastman Avenue, in which I had been information that Taylor and Shad had been at both residences. Also, I was aware that several knives had been found in the basement on Stony Brook Lane that were covered in what appeared to be human matter. And my concern was that was Shad's blood and tissue. So I wanted to confirm that. So I took the one knife that I chose was the bread knife, so to speak, that she had used mainly to dismember the body, according to Ms. Shabusiness, and that had been found in, I believe, the Jimmy Choo bag in the basement. So I chose that knife as particular for testing. There were several other knives located in the same areas, but I just decided to take the one knife. I also decided to send swabs that I'd taken from her hands to see if that was, in fact, DNA from Shad on her hands and on his blood. I also chose the swabbing from what was a rose substance in the apartment and her and the bedroom of Taylor Shubis' apartment, to determine what that substance was, if it was blood, and also determine if it in fact it belonged to Taylor or Shad, so he could be linked again to that particular residence.
And then, do you recall the other items that you sent to the lab in this case?
The other items that I had sent also was a the swab, the oral swab that was taken from Shad from the autopsy, and I had the penile swab that was taken during autopsy from Shad, and I also asked one of my forensic evidence techs to swab the dildo. And so I had the dildo swab, and I sent that also to determine again if any of their individuals, where his DNA was on any of those items.
And how about any of the clothing items that were taken from his business? So did you send those to the lab?
Yes, the sweatpants were specifically sent in.
And did you also send the known control buckle sample from Taylor to the lab?
Yes.
In addition to making the decisions regarding what evidence would be sent to the lab, did you participate in any search warrants in this case?
I did. Four separate cell phones had been located during a course of investigation, two, I believe, at the Stony Brook in the basement, and two in the bedroom on Eastman Avenue. So I wrote a search warrant requesting that all four cell phones data be extracted.
And did you have opportunity to review the extraction from any of the cell phone devices that were seized and searched with a search warrant?
I did.
Specifically, there's been some discussion already about Ms. Shabusiness's primary phone. Did you have an opportunity to review the Cellbrite extraction from Ms. Shabusiness's device?
Yes.
And is that something that you have done regularly in the course of your duties as an investigator with the Green Bay Police Department?
I have.
You're familiar with the Cellbrite program, how it works, and how to navigate it?
Yes.
In particular, when you were searching Ms. Shabusiness's device, what types of information were you interested in?
What was the type of data that was being accessed or used, or photos that were taken during the time period up until the date of the homicide? And you could do what they call a timeline report, and basically it will put in chronological order every single time the phone is accessed or a photo is taken or there's a phone call or there's a text message. So I looked at that timeline into the days preceding the homicide. And it also records anytime a phone will connect to a Wi-Fi network. It can specifically say what Wi-Fi network that phone had accessed. And I found that to be interesting in this case.
And what was important about that Wi-Fi access? We'll touch on that first. What's your purpose in knowing where the Wi-Fi connectivity exists here?
It helps put a location as to where exactly that phone was during a specific period of time.
Now, when you say Wi-Fi connectivity, can you explain a little bit for the jury about how that process works where the device connects to the Wi-Fi?
Well, everybody has a Wi-Fi. I should say mostly everybody has Wi-Fi at home, and everybody has a router, and that router has a specific title to it. You know, it could be a self-made name, or it could be a name that is provided by the manufacturer. And so then, you know, when you look at your phone and you want to connect to somebody's Wi-Fi, you ask them, what's your Wi-Fi name? And they'll say it's, Graf Family, whatever. And then you were able to connect to that. And so in looking at that, I was able to determine that over the course of several days, there were two specific Wi-Fi routers that phone had been accessing.
During the course of the investigation, were you able to obtain the name of the Wi-Fi router for the Eastman Avenue address where Ms. Shabusiness resided with Mr. Tomes?
Yes, I had personal contact with the owner of the occupants, Mr. Tomes, and he informed me that he had used AT&T as his service provider and provided me with the Wi-Fi name.
And similarly, were you able to get the Wi-Fi name for the Stony Brook residents as well?
Yes, I talked to Ms. Pekinich, and again, I was informed that the Spectrum was their internet service provider and provided me with their name also.
And then were you able to look at the extraction from Ms. Shabizness's device and create a timeline for when that particular device was utilizing the respective Wi-Fi networks that you discussed?
That is correct. This is an extraction report that I completed from the data found in Taylor Shabizness's cell phone.
And what specifically is addressed in that particular extraction report?
In this particular one, it is a timeline in terms of network usages, in terms of what Wi-Fi the phone was accessing, and it provides dates and times.
And using that report, are you able to then determine at what times the device is utilizing which of the routers?
Yes.
And what is the significance, or what did you glean from that report then with respect to the dates and times?
Well, I know that on February 22nd, 2022, starting at 12 a.m., it was utilizing the Wi-Fi from the Eastman Avenue address. And there are several entries over the course of time from midnight all the way up until 4 a.m. And it utilized the router of ATT5 FTC9D800, which I had confirmed was the same name of the router from Mr. Thalm's apartment on Eastman Avenue.
At some point in time in the early morning hours of February 22nd of 22, does the phone connect then to a different Wi-Fi router?
Yes. Starting at approximately 6 a.m. on February 22nd, 2022, all the way through 10 a.m. or so. Oh, no, I'm sorry. Yes, well, 10 a.m. approximately. It was the My Spectrum Wi-Fi, which then again I had confirmed that was the Wi-Fi router at the Stony Brook Lane address.
Now, did those, in order to have the phone connect to the particular Wi-Fi device, does that mean that the user necessarily has to be utilizing the device to do something specific?
I don't believe so, no.
There are certain programs that simply run in the background that are searching for or trying to connect to the Wi-Fi?
Yes.
And that doesn't necessarily give you a specific time frame, but does give you general time frames for where Ms. Shabizness's device might have been at certain points in time.
Yeah, that is accurate. It's not specific, but it does give you general timelines, yes.
I think you mentioned earlier you were also looking for photographs in the timeline right around the time of the homicide. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Were you able to note any photographs that were relevant to your investigation in this timeline?
Yeah, I noticed that on February 22nd, 2022, approximately 12:57 a.m., several photos had been taken of Shad Therian.
And those photos were present on Ms. Shabizness's device, is that correct?
That is correct.
And they have very specific date and time stamps?
Yes.
object to 108 and 109. They're similar, but some of the photos on one of the exhibits are more like thumbnail, and then the other one is the larger one. But we already have pictures of the alleged victim, so I would argue duplicity.
Okay, let me see the photos. So your argument is duplicity?
Yes.
Well, I've taken a look at 108 and 109. They're different. Certainly there's thumbnails on 108, which are smaller. Those photos, actually each one of them are different slightly. And there's some other data on 108. So I'm satisfied that I'm going to overrule the objection. And you can proceed.
And what is Exhibit 108 again, Detective?
108 is another extraction report documenting five photos that I had found in Taylor Shabissons' cell phone.
And what's depicted in those photographs?
All photographs are of the head of Shad Therrien.
You say head, these are in-life photos of him, is that correct?
I'm sorry?
These are photos of him while he is still alive, correct?
That is correct.
And 109 depicts what?
109 is a full photo of one of those particular photographs described.
And again, what is the date and time of the photographs in Exhibit 108?
February 22nd, 2022, one at 12:56 a.m., another at 12:56 and 57 seconds a.m., another at 12:57 a.m., another at 12:57 and 12 seconds a.m., and the fifth at 12:57 and 18 seconds a.m.
Have you, as part of your investigation in this case, had an opportunity to review photographs of the two residences, the Eastman residence and the residence on Stony Brook?
Yes.
Based on your review of those photographs and then the review of Exhibit 109, are you able to ascertain where that photograph was taken?
The photographs just described, the background is the same as the bedroom on Eastman Avenue.
And is that also consistent with the timeline that you noted from the Wi-Fi usage?
Correct.
That the phone would have been utilizing that device around that time?
Yes.
I would ask for permission to publish 109, Your Honor.
Okay. You can publish 109.
Is the screen now depicting Exhibit 109?
Yes, it is.
Thank you. Detective, I now want to return to the interview and specific conversations about what Ms. Shabissons told you on February 23rd of 2022. First of all, can you start by describing, you know, what her general demeanor was when you met with her on the 23rd?
Well, characteristic as a calm demeanor, no outbursts, no mood swings. She was quite frank in being able to answer questions and ask questions.
What was your ability to communicate with her?
Very good. She was able to answer my questions and with no issues.
You indicated that you had previous work as a narcotics investigator. Have you had an opportunity in the past to meet with and interview suspects who are under the influence of drugs?
Yes.
Did you note anything in Ms. Shabissons' behavior, demeanor, or appearance that would have suggested that she was under the influence of narcotics at the time you were meeting with her on the 23rd?
I did not.
Can you describe going into that interview, how much information you had about the specific acts themselves?
At the particular time, I had very little information. What I knew was that Theron had been fallen in a bucket in the basement, and also just the information that I had from talking to his mother about who was he last seen with and his last known whereabouts, according to her.
In terms of the specifics of what happened to Shad and where the rest of his body was, is that information that you knew prior to beginning the interview with Ms. Shabusiness?
No.
The information about Shad and what happened to him and where his body was, where did that information come from?
Ms. Shabusiness.
And to begin your interview, how did you begin asking her about the specific events?
I basically stated to her that with the information that I had, and the information that I had at that point in time was that Shad's head had been found in a bucket in the basement, and that she had one point had been with Shad. So I just asked her if she could tell me what happened.
And was she able to describe to you what happened?
Yes.
What did she say with respect to how Shad was killed?
How Shad was killed?
Correct.
She said that Shad had produced a chain, like a dog collar, and put it around his neck. Initially, it sounded like it might have been some sort of foreplay, but it got to the point that she started to strangle Mr. Therion and just continued to do so, according to her, for several minutes until he passed away.
Did she, as it relates to the strangulation, did she make any statements about her observations of Shad as she was choking him with that chain?
Yes, she stated that his head turned purple. He started to, I believe, blood coming out of his mouth. His tongue was protruded, I believe.
Did you ask her whether she chose to stop at that juncture?
I did.
And what was her response?
She stated that she wanted to continue to see what happened.
And did you ask her whether or not Shad had struggled at all when she was choking him?
She said that he did.
And what was her response to that?
My understanding is that Shad had been laying on the bed, prone, face down, and she was on top of him. And so she was able to choke and control his body, so to speak, that even though he was struggling, she was able to still maintain control.
Did you ask her about how she felt about what she had done?
Yes.
And what were her responses?
Objection, relevance, yes, to elements, Your Honor.
I think they're certainly relevant as to her intent.
Overruled.
Her response was that she liked it.
Had she also at some point expressed some remorse or that she didn't necessarily want this to happen?
Initially, that was some of her comments, was that, it hadn't intended, but once she started to strangle Shad, that she found that she did enjoy it, and so she kept on strangling him.
Had she expressed anything to you about her use of drugs at the time of the offense or immediately prior to the time of the offense?
She said that approximately 2 days prior to the offense that she and Shad had been smoking methamphetamine.
2 days prior to the offense or 2 days prior to the interview?
I'm sorry, 2 days prior to the interview.
Did she mention anything to you specifically about drugs or paraphernalia that might be found in the residence?
Yes, she stated that there should be a pipe and some methamphetamine in the basement on a dresser or an entertainment center of some sort.
Did she express any knowledge about the location of the chain or chains that were used to strangle Shad?
Yeah, she stated that there was two chains. One would be the same location area as where the methamphetamine was used, and another would be in another table in the basement.
And now I think I asked this earlier, but you're in communication with the investigators who are on scene during the course of this interview. Is that correct?
Correct.
And the information that Ms. Shabusiness is providing you about where things are located and what they might see in the basement, is that being confirmed by investigators on scene?
It is.
And the information that she's providing you, is that accurate with what they're observing?
Yes.
After the strangulation itself, what did Ms. Shabusiness tell you that she did with Shad?
Well, initially, we were aware of the, Shad's head being in a bucket, but we were not aware of where the rest of his body had been located. So there were several questions pertaining to where his body was located. And Ms. Shabusiness' response to that, it was still in the basement. Then she then later went on to explain that she, in fact, had dismembered Shad's body and placed the various body parts into several bags and or a tote down in the basement.
Was she able to describe in detail the things that she did to dismember Shad?
Yes.
And again, are you matching that back up with information from investigators at the scene?
Correct.
Was she able to actually describe the types of bags or types of containers where she's placing body parts?
Yes.
And again, is that consistent with what investigators are later finding on the scene?
Yes.
Did she talk to you about how she dismembered or what she used to dismember Shad's body?
Yes, she stated that she used knives that she obtained from the kitchen of the residence.
Was she able to describe to you where those knives would be located in the basement?
Yes, she described that the knives would be in the same package or the bags that the body parts were also located.
And again, is that consistent with what investigators were finding on scene?
Yes.
In addition to the dismemberment, did Ms. Shabusiness discuss with you anything else that she did with Chad's body after she had killed him?
Yes, she did.
And what was that?
She described how she had sexual contact with the body in terms of playing with his penis. Also, she described that she had a dildo that she placed into Shad's mouth and to his anus, and that she also had cuddled the body.
Did she discuss performing oral sex on Shad?
That's correct.
Did she indicate about how long she had cuddled or played with Shad's body?
She indicated that, it was, I don't exactly recall how long of a period of time, but there was a period of time, I believe shortly before or after the start of dismemberment.
Did she talk to you at all about trying to clean up the scene or what she was doing with the blood during the course of the dismemberment?
Yes, I have been made aware that there was not a significant portion of blood found in the basement that would have been consistent with dismemberment. So I asked her about that, and her response was that she mainly used like the bucket and or the blue tote to capture a lot of the blood and eventually to dispose of some of that into the shower in the basement. She also did talk about the dismemberment and the removal of body parts, and in fact that there should still be a portion of Shad's lower limbs, like legs, in the van that she had been operating. So she did describe how she did remove at least a couple of his body parts during the course of dismemberment. And when I say move, I mean out of the residence itself.
And did she specifically give you a reason for why she ultimately left the residence on that day?
She told me that she had heard lots of walking around upstairs, and she also heard that she had thought she had heard some shots being fired in the area. In this call, there's some concern, and she She just decided that she had needed to leave at that point.
Did she discuss with you what her intention was with respect to Shad's head?
One of the first things that she did say was that she did like the head, and that it was her intent to take the head as well as the genitalia that was in the bucket with her. That's why she specifically placed those items in the bucket. But she did mention that she had left the bucket by the stairs. I don't know if she intentionally wanted to do that, but there was talk that it was her intent to take the head and the genitalia with her also.
At some point in time, do you discuss with Ms. Shabusiness a specific timeline for the events leading up to that evening?
Yes.
And what does she tell you about the timeline of her whereabouts leading up to this event?
2 days before the 21st, that Monday, is when she was at the apartment on Eastman Avenue with her friend AJ. They decided to go pick up Shad, which they did do. They were turned back to the apartment. At one point, they also did visit Shad's father, Michael Therrien, and then also again returned to the apartment at Eastman Avenue, where they stayed there for a while. At one point, AJ left, and then Shad and Taylor then returned to Shad's mother's residence on Stony Brook Lane.
And the information that she's providing you with respect to the timeline, is that information that also was consistent with the other aspects of your investigation?
Correct.
Had she mentioned to you while you're discussing the timeline use of narcotics or controlled substances?
While they were in the apartment on Eastman Avenue, they did use her and Shad smoked methamphetamine, and she also indicated that Shad and AJ smoked marijuana.
Had she talked to you about what vehicle she was using to travel around to these locations?
Yes, the entire time she was using her roommate, Mr. Tom's gold Chrysler minivan.
Did you ask her whether Mr. Tom's had given her permission to use the vehicle?
I don't know if I asked her specifically that question, no. But it was under impression that she was using it at the time of the interview. I was not sure. I later found out that Mr. Tom's claimed that she has used it in the past, but not necessarily was supposed to use it that night.
Did she tell you any information about whether Mr. Tomes was involved in this crime at all?
He was just at the apartment the entire time, sitting in a chair, basically. And according to her, he wasn't even aware of what they were doing, because he was either behind him or in the bedroom.
When you were speaking with Ms. Shabusiness, did you ask her about whether or not anyone else had come down into the basement at any point in time?
Yes.
And what did she say?
That's when she stated that she believed that Shad's mother had come down with a cat.
And did she discuss actually having any interaction with Shad's mother at that time?
She said that she did not, and I asked Taylor if she thought that the mother had seen her, and she stated that she did not believe so. Asked her what she did, and Taylor just stated basically that she kept quiet and was off in the like the finished part of the basement.
So I want to draw your attention then to the second interview with Ms. Shabusiness that occurred on February 28th. Is that right?
Correct.
And that was also a recorded interview?
Yes, it was.
And you advised her of her Miranda rights prior to that interview?
I did.
And she waived those rights and agreed to answer questions?
Yes, she did.
Did you make observations of her demeanor generally on that day?
I would classify it as being the same. Calm, was able to answer questions appropriately, No outward signs of any disruptions or mood swings.
And was she able to understand your questions and answer them appropriately?
Objection. Yes. Calls for speculation, Your Honor.
Overruled.
Leading? Argument for leading? Pardon? Argument for leading, alternative argument, Your Honor.
Overruled. Go ahead, ask another question, Mr. Levay.
Thank you. And what was generally the purpose of conducting that second interview with Ms. Business?
Conduct some follow-up questions concerning that we had that you know, came up during the course of the investigation concerning like her disposition of the body, what were intentions of what they're doing with the body, and her cleaning up after herself.
And what did she say with respect to the purpose of dismemberment and then the cleanup?
According to Ms. Business, the purpose was that she realized she needed to remove the body from the residence so that she wouldn't be caught. And she, you know, Shad was more that she could carry just in terms of being a whole body. So the dismemberment and putting them into bags was to facilitate with her being able to remove the body from the residence.
And did you discuss with her the attempts to clean up the residence as well?
Yes, and Detective Scanlon had been an integral part of the search of the residence itself. So he asked her several questions about cleaning up because he had observed some you know, markings or on the cement down area under, that had been underneath the bed, as well as there was a squeegee in the shower down in the basement, in some items such as Clorox, you know, wipes. And so he asked her about that, and she stated that, yes, she did use the cleaning materials such as the Clorox wipes and the spray to clean up several of the areas of the in the basement, as well as using squeegee to clean up the shower area, and subsequently placed these wipes in the same bags that the body parts was found, which again is consistent with what Detective Scanlon had found.
And Detective, I think I asked you these questions already, but have you had an opportunity subsequent to the interviews to review the recorded interview from both the 23rd and the 28th of February?
Correct.
And you do believe that the recordings were accurate and consistent with your recollection of the interviews?
They are.
Your Honor, at this point, I intend to show significant portions of the first interview and a smaller portion of the second interview, but it's about an hour and 10 minutes in length for the first interview and about 4 minutes for the second. So I think now would be a good time to take a break.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, we started a little bit late, but nonetheless, we're going to be watching a video. So I think what we'll do is take a break until 10:20. It's now about 8 minutes after 10. And with that, all rise for the jury. Anything to bring up before we break, Mr. Saunders?
No.
Mr. Fraley?
No.
I'm assuming there's been, you referenced it earlier, a stipulation as to what pieces of this video you're going to show.
The state's understanding, the specific times were provided, a copy of the excise video was provided to the defense.
Your Honor, that's correct. We talked about this issue, so.
Okay, very good. We'll take a break until 10:20.
You're listening to True Crime Today and the Hidden Killers podcast continuous coverage of the trial of Taylor Shabusiness, Nightmare in Wisconsin.
Press subscribe so you don't miss any of our continuing coverage.
More raw trial audio next.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, There are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to lifelock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply. You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to lifelock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.
This message is sponsored by Greenlight. With school out, summer is the perfect time to teach our kids real-world money skills they'll use forever. Greenlight is a debit card and the number one family finance and safety app used by millions of families, helping kids learn how to save, invest, and spend wisely. Parents can send their kids money and track their spending and saving, while kids build money confidence and skills in fun ways. Start your risk-free Greenlight trial today at greenlight.com/iHeart. That's greenlight.com/iHeart.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to lifelock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply. You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to lifelock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.
You know, if you can find the joy in the small moment, life will always be that much more fun. That's what Hello's oral and personal care products are all about. They take the mundane of every day and inject it with some everyday yay. Take Hello's anti-plaque and whitening fluoride-free toothpaste, for instance. It will brighten your routine and delight your senses with a formula that's equal parts fresh, friendly, and has plaque-fighting power. Or see the difference that a whitening toothpaste powered by vitamin C can do for your smile with Hello's Vitamin C Whitening Fluoride Toothpaste. With thoughtful and fun products that can make brushing your teeth feel like a confetti-filled bathroom dance party. So say hello to happy, to making the most of every moment. Say hello to a vegan, cruelty-free, and never tested on animals toothpaste. And say so long to dyes, parabens, artificial sweeteners and flavors, and other things you can do without. Visit HelloProducts.com and let Hello add some everyday yay into your life.
Not all meals are created equal. For instance, breakfast has the spicy egg McMuffin for a limited time, and lunch doesn't. McDonald's breakfast comes first. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply. You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply. You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.
Not all meals are created equal. For instance, breakfast has the spicy egg McMuffin for a limited time, and lunch doesn't. McDonald's breakfast comes first. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
Hi, I'm Kristen Bell, and if you know my husband, Dax, then you also know he loves shopping for a car. Selling a car? Not so much.
We're really doing this, huh?
Thankfully, Carvana makes it easy. Answer a few questions, put in your VIN or license, and done. We sold ours in minutes this morning, and they'll come pick it up and pay us this afternoon.
Bye-bye, Truckee.
Of course, we kept the favorite.
Hello, other Truckee.
Sell your car with Carvana today. Terms and conditions apply.